Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staker. For nearly 100 years, America has provided public housing, subsidies so that low-income families, single mothers, seniors, and those with disabilities can have safe places to sleep. Housing vouchers provide security, or at least they're supposed to. A federal audit found serious problems with Columbus's housing voucher program, including the private company hired to manage it. Delayed inspections and repairs resulted in people here living in homes that were, quote, not always decent, safe, and sanitary. Columbus says it's fixing those mistakes, but housing advocates wonder whether privatization may be partially to blame. Joining me now are two housing advocates from here in Columbus. Melissa Benson, she's the senior managing attorney at Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. Welcome to All Sides, Melissa.
Thank you.
And Jesse Vogel, an Equal Justice Works Fellow at Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. He represents immigrants, migrants, and refugees on housing law matters. Welcome to All Sides, Jesse.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let's start with the basics so everyone is on the same page this hour. What is Section 8 and how does one qualify for the program?
Section 8 is a housing subsidy paid for by the federal government through the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and it is a subsidy that is tied to the individual person. So as opposed to a subsidy being connected to a specific location, an individual who meets certain income qualifications, is low income, has this Section 8 voucher with which they can go and rent from a private landlord. And there's a contract also between the landlord and the Metropolitan Housing Authority, where the Metropolitan Housing Authority, through HUD, pays a portion of the tenant's rent, and the tenant's generally responsible for a portion of rent that is 30% of their income.
So if, let's say, rent was $1,000, the federal government might give the landlord $700 and the tenant might give $300, let's just say as an example.
So it's based on the person's income,
right,
not the rent, but
right,
but yes, if
that
was
that,
if 300 was 30% of their monthly income,
yes,
then that would be what they would pay. Yes.
And so people apply through their local housing authorities all across the country, and here it's called the Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority, or CMHA, and we'll probably just use CMHA this hour because that's way easier than saying Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority over and over again. They serve around 13,500 people, and they give out more than $8 million a month. So, I mean, it's a fairly substantial operation.
Yes.
That's right. And it's a big impact on families. So, tenants who receive Section 8 vouchers often are low income and also experience other kinds of vulnerabilities that make it hard to pay rent each month, including many live with disabilities. Many folks are new arrivals to the United States and might not speak English. And many folks are just working minimum wage jobs as cashiers or laborers or folks who are home health aides who make a wage that doesn't match the rental market. So it's hard to find a place to rent at that level.
So up until 2022, CMHA had its own staff who handled these applications, set in checks to landlords, did inspections, etc., all the administrative duties of managing a program. What changed in 2022?
Well, in 2022, CMHA made the decision to contract out responsibilities for managing the day-to-day management and responsibility of the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program. So in this program, there are different things that both the Public Housing Authority needs to do and that a tenant needs to do that require interacting with staff. So for example, the Public Housing Authority under federal law has a responsibility to inspect units that receive federal subsidies to make sure that they're safe for families to live in. And in addition, families have the responsibility every year to report their annual income and report their family composition. And they also have to apply to make sure CMHA approves a unit before they move into it. So they contracted out to a private company, CGI, the responsibilities of taking care of those paperwork tasks and managing and interfacing with tenants, as well as inspecting units.
Melissa, they laid off about 47 employees, saying that it would save more than $1 million a year and that they could spend that money creating more public housing. What have you heard from clients and from people in the program about how CGI has managed things here in Columbus?
So I think that it's very important to note that when CMHA was handling the Section 8 voucher program itself, they did a really wonderful job of administering it. Those 47 employees were people from our community. They were from the communities that were being served. There was a cultural competency there. And each person had a caseworker. And when CGI came in, it shifted from this model of having a caseworker who was connected with you and your family and understood what was going on in your situation to basically a customer service call-in model, like you would call in when you have a problem with your cell phone or something to that effect. So the level of contact.
So you're getting somebody different every time you call.
Correct. Yeah. The level of contact and the level of familiarity was just not there. And the level of cultural competency. As Jesse mentioned, a lot of the individuals who are receiving vouchers have some sort of barriers in terms of disabilities, language barriers, just a lot of life going on that makes it hard for them to focus on some of these things. And having an individual person that they could talk to when they had issues who was responsible and connected to them really made a huge difference in them being able to access the program and to have their vouchers and not have issues with them.
So you're saying life got more difficult for the people in the program when CGI took over?
Very much
so. Just by nature of the format change.
Very much so. I think that lack of individual contact was a huge part of all of the issues that we saw across the board.
And then, Jesse, along comes a Columbus Dispatch investigation that finds that, you know, CGI's, say, inspections, so they have to go out and physically look at these units and make sure that they're habitable before the federal government will cover part of the rent. And, you know, the Dispatch investigation found that this should take about 7 to 10 days. These were taking up to 3 months. People were getting booted out of the program at record high numbers. Just, like, administratively, it sounds like the paperwork was getting messed up.
I think the paperwork was getting messed up. Notices were sent that were contradictory to tenants, that they couldn't understand what they had to do. And then if you had the chance ever to see CGI's office, they moved into a small office downtown. So whereas CMHA has an office that's accessible on a major bus line on Cleveland Avenue, CGI had an office downtown where it was hard to park. You would see lines of tenants outside the office. And, you know, it was really hard to figure out what needed to happen. So, you know, I have a story of a client who, you know, received a notice of termination and was terminated from the voucher program until we got involved and got that reversed. And in part, it was because he was a Somali speaker who received notices that were not in his language. And he couldn't get an appointment with CGI to figure out what was going on and what he needed to do to get back on the program. So that's an example of a problem that lots of our clients face.
And getting booted off can be problematic, just not even because it disrupts where you're living, but because there's such a long waiting list that if you have to go to the back of the line, you could be waiting years to get another voucher.
That's right. I think a Dispatch reporting earlier this year showed that there was a wait list of 24,000 at the moment. So it takes years.
Which is double the amount of people that are on Section 8 here in the area.
Yes, there's a huge need for housing subsidies. I think that in the Columbus metro area, there's an estimate that about 40% of renters in Columbus are rent burdened right now, which means that they're paying more than 30% of their income in rent, especially as housing prices have raised so significantly since the pandemic. So there already was not enough subsidies to go around for the people who needed them, and these extra challenges in access made things very difficult, particularly with the inspections. In order for a tenant to move in to a home with a voucher, there has to be a health quality standards inspection that the home needs to pass, and that the landlord, if it isn't up to standards, is supposed to make the necessary repairs before the tenant moved in. There was a significant period of time where these inspections at the beginning of the transition to CGI were significantly delayed. And that actually started, I believe, before CGI took over. There had been a separate company that had been contracted out to do the inspections, and they were not performing those inspections appropriately, so they got behind at that point. So the pandemic plus that plus this contract shift kind of created a perfect storm. And we had clients who were sleeping in their cars for months while they were waiting for their home to be inspected and approved, because until that voucher is attached, once that inspection happens, the CMHA will not pay the subsidy, even if you are living there. They can't go backwards to do that.
And I would think as a landlord, too, like, I don't know that you want to wait 2-3 months for somebody's voucher to come through when you could just rent to somebody else.
That was definitely a challenge. Absolutely.
And we heard actually from our office, we received after some of the reporting was done by the Columbus Dispatch on some of the challenges with CGI, we received notes from landlords who said, we want to rent to tenants taking Section 8 vouchers, and we have in the past, but we're worried now with CGI that we just can't make it work because we can't count on the rent getting paid each month, which totally makes sense. It's a real problem.
So this all comes to a head earlier this year when the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development audited CMHA. And the audit reviewed 84 units, so they randomly picked a couple of different units, and found that 48 of them had a total of 248 deficiencies. So I was like, oh my goodness, that means each unit that they looked at like had multiple problems.
Yes.
It is a 42-page audit, I will say. It is very detailed.
Yeah, so the housing stock in Columbus, particularly housing stock for low-income families, tends to be older and have some and need some repairs and some updates and modifications in general. And one of the ways that we ensure that low-income families have safe housing is through these quality inspections. And there's going to be things that come up that need to be fixed. Some of them significant. Some of them less so, but it's important that these issues get remedied quickly because every person deserves to live in safe, stable housing.
Yeah, some of these, so 16 of these violations had life-threatening issues that needed to be addressed within 24 hours. There were electrical hazards, infestations, mold, water problems, sewage problems. There were pictures of, like, some of the photographs included in the audit of, like, rotting window frames, non-functioning sinks overrun with bugs. Like, I mean, some of these problems, Jesse, were, like, serious habitability issues.
That's right. There are lots of challenges in the housing stock, and the OIG, the Office of Inspector General audit report, you know, draws attention to them. The other thing I think it draws attention to is the fact that by contracting out the responsibility to do these inspections, and then on top of that, by contracting out the responsibility to do the quality control of the inspection. So CGI was doing inspections and was doing its own quality control. You know, we lost the ability to have folks on the ground sort of doing the community control to make sure that housing stock that is getting federal funds is of high quality. And I guess that's not to say, you know, the problem is real, as Melissa pointed out. You know, it's virtually impossible if you're making a minimum wage job working full time to afford a unit and afford your other expenses at the same time. So the housing stock folks are forced into already is of challenging quality often. We need, you know, our housing authority and folks receiving federal funds to do their part and, you know, follow the law.
Yeah, the conclusion of that audit by the Department of Housing and Urban Development said, quote, these deficiencies occurred because the authority did not adequately oversee the performance of its contractor. So, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. They felt like CMHA wasn't watching CGI.
And let me share, you know, the you know, I think this is so disappointing in part because we know that CMHA can do the work to manage its federal funds and to make sure families who have low incomes, who are working class, are living in safe and quality housing. We've seen it in the past. Melissa Benson and I have worked with excellent staff at CMHA over the years who work really hard every day to solve problems for low-income families and keep them housed. And so it's sort of disappointing to see this report and to see, you know, the impact of the sort of privatization. And that's why also we're thankful for the new that we've heard that CGI's contract is not being renewed in next year.
I want to say that we reached out to the Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority and invited them to join today's discussion. They declined, but sent a statement that says, as CMHA has previously stated, the current contract with CGI is scheduled to expire March 25th. And CMHA is carefully considering all potential options to determine the best approach for managing the Section 8 program moving forward. I also should note that we reached out to CGI Federal, that private company that manages our public housing, and a spokesperson said, at this time, we will not be participating or issuing a statement. So we did try. We cannot force people to join us. But they have said, Melissa, that they're not going to continue with CGI going forward.
Correct. And we are hopeful that CMHA will consider bringing the voucher program back in-house to administer as they look at what their next steps are here. I think that a lot of the issues that we saw came from that lack of personal touch and having people from serving the community that were a part of the community that have that cultural competency with the language issues that Jesse has done so much work around. Prior to the privatization, there were people at the front desk at CMHA who were fluent in Somali. And there are many Somali families receiving vouchers. So when they walked in, they had someone that they could speak with. There was that automatic translation piece there that just made it easier to access. When people with so many barriers have one more barrier put up in front of them, even if it is something small like not being able to have a conversation with a person who understands the specific facts of your case because they've been working with you on it, it really does create enormous challenges. And so we are very hopeful that they will bring it back to that group of individuals who were so connected with the community.
That was Melissa Benson, the senior managing attorney at Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. Coming up, we're expanding our conversation beyond Ohio to the national trend towards privatizing public housing. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about a federal audit of Columbus's public housing program this hour and what the city is doing to correct the serious issues that it found. Still with us is Melissa Benson, senior managing attorney at the Legal Aid Society of Southeast and Central Ohio, and Jesse Vogel, an Equal Justice Works Fellow at the Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. So the conclusion of that audit by the Department of Housing and Urban Development was that the CMHA, the local body here, was not overseeing its contractor, CGI. And I sort of have to wonder whether you guys think that privatizing the administration of Columbus's Section 8 program has been a good thing or a bad thing for the city.
I think in this specific instance, it's pretty clear to everyone, including CMHA, that this did not work out as it was intended to, and that that people did not get the services that they need. So I'm pleased to see that they have decided to shift away from CGI.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm hopeful that we can, move forward and clients and folks who depend on this lifeline, which really is a lifeline, to pay their rent. They expect, just like you and I pay my rent. I expect my rent to be paid on time. You know, tenants expect that the program will work appropriately, that they can understand what's required of them and that inspections will be done. And so I'm hopeful that transitioning away from CGI will help improve things.
And if you want to join the conversation this hour, if you're a landlord who manages Section 8 tenants, if you're someone on the program, or if you have a comment, give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email allsides@wosu.org. We've talked a lot about the conditions of the apartments and about general management issues, but I wonder, what has been the impact on tenants? Like, what is the impact day to day of a mismanaged public housing program?
The impacts ranged from people losing their subsidy inappropriately to just a great deal of stress and anxiety for families that while they were struggling to try and figure this out, particularly those individuals who could not reach someone, could not have a conversation. We had clients tell us they were on hold for hours, that they waited in line to get an appointment or to meet with someone, and then were told to come back another day. That it was exhausting for people, I think, on a lot of levels.
That sounds a little bit what it was like to navigate the unemployment system during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I think that's an interesting example because, Anna, here, you know, in our culture, in our country, you know, folks who are low income and working class already feel marginalized and feel like they've done something wrong to get into the position they've gotten into, you know, whereas often it's because of another kind of system failure that's along the way. Folks who haven't gotten access to services they need or education they need or who live with disabilities, physical, emotional, mental. You know, so Anna, when I spoke with clients, you know, I have experiences of sitting with a client who came to Columbus because from Ethiopia, because she was told that Columbus was a good place for immigrants to live, that they'd be good to you here. You know, and yet I sat with her as she showed me her stack of papers that she received from CGI, notice after notice, packet after packet that was conflicting and hard to figure out, and explained to me her feeling of, quite frankly, desperation, of depression. And, you know, folks have felt that. And so, you know, we've gotten things fixed with CMHA. Often with clients in those situations, we've been lucky to intervene. And I'm hopeful that a change away from CGI will make that more accessible, that good outcome more accessible to more people.
I also want to reiterate that we reached out to CGI Federal, and a spokesman replied that at this time, we will not be participating or issuing a statement. You know, it is so, like, I don't know, when you think of public housing, I don't know, I grew up outside of New York City, so I think of those big brick homogenous buildings in the city, right? Like actual public buildings run by a public authority. It seems, I don't know, public housing, but it's private landlords managed by private companies. At what point does it stop being public housing?
And I think that that is a very good question from a larger sociological context. In 2015, here in Columbus, the Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority began to get, I don't want to say get rid of, but to shift its public housing that they had managed since the inception of the program to private management. Some of that through a federal push to rehab buildings through what's called the RAD program. But with that shift, not only did tenants, you know, no longer live in public housing, which has addition, but they lost specific some level of rights because tenants living in public housing had additional notice rights and additional rights to informal hearings, things along those lines to protect them if they were about to lose their housing before it came to the point of eviction, an intervention point before that, which is so exceptionally important today, considering that the mere filing of an eviction causes such hardship for a family while they look for new housing.
Because a filing, even if it's never carried out, I will say that's one thing I've learned in recent months, stays on your record forever. It's not like a credit report. So even if they file and you work it out, that's going to stay forever, ever.
Yeah. So there's a court record that always exists, and then there's a credit report separate from that.
Yeah.
And in Franklin County, in the municipal court here, they removed the online court record after 3 years. The record itself still exists, but you would have to physically go to the court to get it. And that's a program that the court here has chosen to do, but that is not statewide.
No. Yeah, it's definitely a larger conversation, and it's one we're going to be continuing this hour about. What is public housing if it's privately run for private buildings? And what is your take on that, Jesse? Like, what does public housing, I guess, mean to you?
That's a great question. I mean,
it's a big question.
Yeah. And, you know, public housing goes back to the New Deal era, the U.S. Housing Act of 1937, and the programs developed out of that. And our Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority, you know, was created in that era at first to manage public housing that was, you know, owned and managed by the Housing Authority. I saw one report recently that said at one point there were 6,000 units earlier in the program that were owned and managed themselves by the Public Housing Authority. At this point, I believe there are fewer than 300 remaining. Whereas our voucher program, which is, again, the privatization where a private landlord receives federal funds and a private landlord manages it with some requirements from the federal government, you know, as you said, are 13,000 or so vouchers out there. So, you know, we've seen a trend towards privatization here locally that's been part of the trend nationally. And, you know, what is public housing today? There's not much of it. And, you know, one thing, you know, you might look at is what cities and regions across the country are doing to find ways to sort of publicly own and manage and develop housing. CMHA is doing some of that, but there's been a decision made that it's no longer cost effective for them to manage their own housing, which is why, as Melissa said, in 2015 or so, they started privatizing and also laying off the staff that had been unionized and had, you know, managed, you know, been employed to manage public housing in the past. So we've seen a move away from that, which, you know, is for a policy decision that, you know, they've made.
That was Jesse Vogel, an Equal Justice Fellow at Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And thank you to Melissa Benson, the Senior Managing Attorney at Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio.
Thank you for having us.
We're talking about the privatization of public housing this hour after a federal investigation found serious issues with the company managing Columbus's Section 8 program. CGI, the private company managing Columbus's public housing, has contracts all over the country, including states like New York, where it manages more than 76,000 units. Molly Rocket is a staff attorney for Legal Services of New York City, where she specializes in Section 8 housing. Rocket is also a graduate of Harvard Law School and a professor for the Housing Rights Clinic at New York Law School. Welcome to All Sides, Molly.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna.
So the Columbus Housing Authority let go of about 47 employees when it contracted with CGI. The idea being it would save the city enough money to help a couple hundred more families. How common is this story in other cities?
Well, Anna, it's absolutely the same story that we saw led to CGI's involvement in New York City at the federal level. In the late 1990s, the federal Department of Housing and Urban Development reduced its staff by about a third. And that's what started its trend of delegating those administrative responsibilities first to state housing authorities and now to private corporations like CGI. And I think Jesse and Melissa were exactly right that it's part of a broader trend of disinvestment, trying to spend less on public housing.
So, Molly, you've written about how CGI has managed public housing in New York City, and it sounds like the tenants there have had similar issues to the tenants here in Columbus.
That's right. And CGI plays a different role in New York City than it did in Columbus. In New York City, CGI kind of oversees the private managers of subsidized Section 8 developments. So those private property managers are also working for corporations, also private actors. They're the ones who are calculating rent, making decisions about moving in and moving out of units, helping tenants with disabilities and all of that. CGI is supposed to be the corporation that is making sure those private landlords follow the rules and respect tenants' rights. That's supposed to be CGI's role in New York City.
So they're kind of the general contractor with a bunch of subcontractors underneath them.
Well, exactly. I would say, you know, originally HUD was the one who was overseeing these private landlords, private subsidized developments. HUD was making sure they followed the rules. But then when HUD reduced its size and laid off about a third of its staff in the late 1990s, the delegation started. It went down first to state agencies, and now those state agencies have subdelegated even another level down to CGI. So now CGI is really standing in HUD's shoes, being the actor who's supposed to be overseeing the private property managers and private owners of Section 8 developments.
One of the things you've written about is non-compliance and the rise of non-compliance in the recent years. I want to ask you, what first, can we define what non-compliance is and what is the real impact? Like, what does that mean for the people who live in these apartments day in and day out?
Absolutely. So non-compliance of private owners and private property managers basically just means these profit-motivated actors are not respecting tenants' rights in this type of housing. So the tenants who are living there are have a right to, they are entitled to their rent to be calculated correctly. They're entitled to changes in policies and procedures when they have disabilities. They're entitled to live safely and stably in this type of housing. There are all of these tenants' rights regulations that protect them. And what we're seeing is private property managers, you know, who work for corporations, are not respecting those rights. They are miscalculating tenants' rents all the time, routinely. I call it rent shenanigans. You'll see people's rents bounce up and down and up and all over the place. And they're, you know, turning off tenants' Section 8, terminating their Section 8 wrongly. They're sending tenants to eviction court wrongly. It's really a nightmare right now for tenants living in these developments under these private actors.
So why does HUD, why does the city of New York continue to use these private actors?
So these, the private owners and property managers of Section 8 subsidized developments, project-based Section 8 rental assistance, were chosen when that program was created in the 80s. I think the real question is, why does New York City and HUD not oversee them directly themselves, right? Why is HUD and the New York state subcontractors giving away that critical responsibility to a private corporation? Especially since now you have this very existentially hilarious situation where you have a private corporation, CGI, ostensibly policing and overseeing a private property manager. And they're both driven by profit incentives. They're both trying to make a buck. So the tenant in that situation doesn't have a public actor, a fully publicly accountable actor to go to bat for them.
Do you see the same problem that we saw here in Columbus where it becomes a call center rather than a caseworker? Because that seems to be one of the things that's really been tripping up people here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. CGI has been a subcontractor in New York City since 2005. And all of the issues that Jesse was describing, we have here. They're difficult to get in contact, if not impossible. They run a call center, a customer call center, which is such an unbelievable term, in my opinion, for someone who's supposed to be helping tenants. And they, you know, do not go to bat for tenants, right? So they're antagonistic to tenants often. They don't take tenants' complaints seriously. If you can even get in touch with them, they're very understaffed in New York City, probably because, again, they're not trying to spend more than they have to keep their contract. And the most insidious thing, I think, Anna, in New York City, which is a little different than Columbus, most tenants don't even know CGI exists in New York City. They are so entrenched since 2005. Certainly private property managers are not going to tenants and saying, hey, if you have a complaint about my behavior, call these people. they will help you hold me accountable. Private property managers are not doing that. So it would be on CGI to be reaching out to tenants and contacting them. And they're just not. We go into these buildings all the time. Tenants have never heard of CGI. They don't have any understanding that there's any way they can challenge the abuse they're experiencing at the hands of their private property managers.
Oh my goodness. That is Molly Rocket, a staff attorney for legal services in New York City, where she specializes in Section 8 housing. Coming up, the broader trend towards privatizing public housing. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Around 2 million people in America called public housing home. These units, often occupied by single mothers, older adults, and those with disabilities, are a critical source of affordable housing. And yet, the federal budget for maintaining government units and managing those operated by private landlords has dropped year after year after year, pushing local housing authorities like the one here in Columbus toward cost savings through private contractors. Still with us is Molly Rocket, a staff attorney for legal services in New York City, where she specializes in Section 8 housing. Rocket is also a graduate of Harvard Law School and a professor for the Housing Rights Clinic at New York Law School. Molly, I want to go all the way back to the beginning of public housing, to 1937 and the U.S. Housing Act, which President Franklin Roosevelt described as habitations which not only fail to provide the physical benefits of modern civilization, but breed disease and impair the health of future generations. So his goal was to do away with that. And I sort of wonder where you think we are in achieving that goal.
Well, I think there's this completely false idea right now that's trending even more, that the private sector somehow is going to come in and save public housing. And in my opinion, nothing could be further from the truth. You know, public housing, that idea, that's a value we've decided on as society. Collectively, we have decided we want to invest in providing people who need it with a safe, dignified, stable place to live. That's our societal value. Private corporations only have one value, and that's profit. So they will never be compatible with the mission, the ideal, our like community collective goal of public housing. And the fact is we just have to invest in our goal. We need to put our public money behind that value for our neighbors living in this type of housing.
For decades, public housing meant those tall brick buildings in big cities. It was quite literally public housing. When did we start shifting to vouchers for private homes and apartments?
Absolutely. So it's vouchers and it's the type of subsidized developments that I work with, which are owned by private landlords, the entire development. It was around the 80s, again, this idea that turning to the private sector and giving public funds to private owners of buildings and corporations would bring more money in and would expand that reach. And what we've seen, you know, years later is that it is hard, if not impossible, to capture these private actors away from their goal of making a buck. So now we have private owners of those developments who undertrain their staff, who don't hire enough staff, who don't care at all about not respecting tenants' rights and shaking around tenants' rent. That's what we're seeing in the legacy of that era in the 80s of these creation of federally subsidized, privately owned developments.
Yeah, because one of the changes that happened in the 80s was that we said that as you know, public housing started to age. It started to need repairs, like any old building. And we said that, you know, you didn't have to replace a unit that got too old, that you could instead give out a voucher. So it sort of gave communities permission, right, not to repair and replace their public housing.
Right. And the project-based Section 8 rental assistance program invited private actors in as well, and gave them federal incentives, public incentives, to do the job of a public housing authority, basically. So instead of having NYCHA or a CMHA, another public agency, doing all this work, you know, random Joe Schmo corporation is doing all this work, processing that federal money, getting those federal incentives.
And, you know, you said it was during the 80s, but I also want to, you know, former President Bill Clinton in the 90s also went pretty, like, he also continued this idea of moving Section 8 towards more privatization. Weirdly, I think this is where Andrew Cuomo enters the story, because he was the HUD secretary under Bill Clinton, correct?
Yes, and a really notorious actor in project-based Section 8 rental assistance, these subsidized developments. That was the beginning of HUD not being the overseer. HUD wanted to reduce its staff again by a third, and that was the beginning of this delegation, this move away from having a public actor be the one to oversee these private corporations.
And that is eventually how we end up with companies like CGI administering these programs. Again, I want to be clear that we invited both CMHA and CGI to join us this hour, both of whom declined. What CMHA here in Columbus had to say is that its contract with that private company, CGI, expires in March of 2025, and they are evaluating the best way to move forward. Is that unusual, Molly? Have you heard of other communities deciding to break from having their private actors oversee their programs?
You know, Anna, one thing that encourages me is I think we are at the beginning of a trend of scrutinizing these private actors that we haven't seen over the past 20 years. Like I said, CGI arrived in New York in 2005. They were first contracted. And I think they've been flying under the radar nationally as subcontractors, private subcontractors. So I hope that this is the beginning of the trend of scrutinizing these actors. What are they here for? You know, what do they want out of this process? And are they actually serving tenants? I haven't seen that turn away happen yet in other places as effectively as Columbus. And I really applaud them for acting so quickly to stop that harm to tenants. But hopefully it's the beginning of a reckoning.
This is a little bit of a bigger, broader question, but how would you define public housing? Because I've been thinking about it a lot. Like, what do we define as public housing? What should public housing look like? Because if it's privately managed in private buildings, at what point is it no longer public housing?
I define public housing as a human right. This is not a good, like a cell phone, exactly like your last guest was saying, something you buy. It is something that you as a human being in our society, you have the right to live safely and stably. And if we as a society are creating that is public housing, the like embodiment and recognition of that ideal. And you compare that to how people live in subsidized developments. Jesse and Melissa were talking about this constant state of fear. You know, they are providing all this information about their income to calculate their rent. Almost half their lives they spend, you know, giving this invasive information to these private actors. They never know what their rent level is because it changes so often under these private actors. Uncertainty, confusion, often it's dehumanizing. It's humiliating to have a private actor have so much control over your life and to exercise that control so arbitrarily without any recourse, no power to fight back formally.
We got a message from a listener named Tracy in Cincinnati, and I'm not sure you're going to be able to answer this, but hopefully we can get her pointed in the right direction. She's lived in Section 8 housing for 9 years, paying rent, and she was recently notified that she's no longer going to get a voucher. And she doesn't understand, like, can they just drop you for no reason? And she's worried because she's going to be evicted. And I mean, it could be an income change that would have disqualified her, but it could also just be a screw up in paperwork.
And that position that Tracy's in, the confusion, the fear of someone coming for her housing, what keeps her safe and homed, is so common. You know, she is not alone in being just baffled and with, you know, without information, basic information about what happened. I would certainly suggest that she reach out to a lawyer, contact legal aid in her area right away. And that she talked to her neighbors. You know, that's what I always tell tenants. At this point, your most powerful tool is collective power to organize together, because everyone's having the same experience.
Yeah, one of the things that the Columbus Dispatch investigation found here was that when CGI took over administration of the program, evictions went up. Mm. Now, one of the things that we were told was that some of this was coming off of the pandemic. People who had continued to qualify during the pandemic was no longer qualifying, so that was part of the spike. But there was a real sharp uptick in the bar graph of people being booted off the program in the years that CGI was managing here in Columbus.
That's very unsurprising to me. I think what folks have to realize is that the abuse of property managers, all these things that they're not doing wrong, not respecting tenants' rights, miscalculating rents, leads to filing of evictions. It generates evictions because tenants can't resolve issues at the front end. In New York City, I was talking to my colleague last month about a client who was an elderly woman, disabled, in and out of the hospital. She was trying to recertify her income, get her new rent amount. She couldn't contact someone at her property management office. The turnover is so high, she never knew who they were when they were there. And they shut off her subsidy for allegedly failing to recertify and started charging her the unsubsidized rent, which was like $2,900, to this woman on a fixed income. And then she faced a non-payment eviction for like $14,000. Allegedly that she hadn't paid. And her feelings of just powerlessness were so similar to Tracy's. So that is what happens when you don't hold private actors to account to the regulations. That's the kind of noncompliance that you see.
Yeah, I looked through the Housing Authority's audit of CMHA, mm-hmm. and it included a number of uncomfortable photographs. I think that's the best way to phrase it. You know, underneath the kitchen sink, completely filled with black mold, rotting windowsills. And now, look, I know that, you know, HUD has a laundry list of things that an apartment or a unit needs to live up to. And some are small and some are big, but a clogged sink overrun by insects. I was just really shocked that people were living with these kinds of conditions for months on end, waiting on repairs.
Right. And in New York City, CGI actually is the one responsible for doing the audits of the private property managers. We've requested those audits for the first time by public information request. And we see numerous violations, even some that are listed year after year as repeat violations. And seemingly CGI does nothing but stamp them. That one's a repeat. We've seen that one before. It's like, okay. And how are we having accountability here?
Yeah, that was my question with some of, because like some things were small, like a window doesn't have a screen. I get it, a mm-hmm. window should have a screen, but it's a small detail. I don't know that like would really impact my quality of life in huge, impactful ways, but some of them are really serious. And to just see it go and go and go, especially when they say, when the federal law says 24 hours to fix something of this level. And if it's supposed to be 24 hours, and now you've seen it at multiple inspections, and just like, how are they living in an apartment without running water?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, it goes to these private corporations who are doing these inspections, and in the case of Columbus, managing the vouchers, are going to do the minimum they have to do to keep their contracts paid. That's what they're structurally designed to do. In New York City, tenants have more recourse to sue for bad conditions. They can almost take it upon themselves to try to hold their landlords accountable. They have more options to do that. But for management issues like, you know, getting massive rent bills in the mail, they have almost no recourse there. So it really is a disaster situation.
On that depressing note, I will say that that was Molly Rocket, a staff attorney for legal services in New York City, where she specializes in Section 8 housing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Anna.
And thank you all to listening. And I want to say thank you to the All Sides staff, which includes senior producer Marcus Charleston, producer Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, intern producers Abigail Jump and Kira Kedar, and board operation this morning by Chris Johnston. Thank you all for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.